Item 9, presentation from Paladin, Tim, do you have comments?
Let Milliman introduce Paladin here. They did their work on this one.
Okay.
I'll scoot over to the side.
Just about all this happened before I retired, so I did most of it, so I'll do most of the talking on this one. Paladin, as you know, Paladin was formed prior to 9/11, but the current approach that Paladin takes, which has evolved somewhat, was formed after 9/11 when some people that were high muckamucks in the government, former head of NSA and different people, got together with Mike Steed, who already had Paladin existing, and decided to come up with the Homeland Security Fund, which was launched shortly after 9/11. And that was, your board had a high level of interest in that, but we recommended that you pass on it and let them build some experience as a team. And you did invest in Paladin 2, which was a fund a couple of years later, and that one is still working its way through, but it looks like it's got an internal rate of return of just about 15%. So it's been it's been reasonably successful. Now, that's a gross return. The net return's in the 4% area because you're still working through the fee issues. And as things go along, that'll shrink. But it's been a reasonably successful fund, I should say. You have a policy that Tim will refer to of trying to concentrate your investments on fund-to-funds kind of opportunities, but you also have a history of re-upping in funds that have been successful for you, both in the private fund area. So there's a bit of a tension there. The wrinkle about this fund is that Paladin has been more successful in areas related to what they're now calling cybersecurity than it has been in more generic kinds of private equity opportunities like Wi-Fi and ethanol. So, and the areas that they've been successful in are a bit over 50% of Fund 2, and their returns have been way over the 15% area before fee in those parts of Fund 2. So they've not illogically decided to concentrate on those areas and ditch the Wi-Fi and the ethanol in this new fund. So that it's not quite exactly the same as the prior fund, but it's a big chunk of the prior fund. So we've kind of dug pretty deep into this thing, and we think the way they segmented it into the part that they're going to go forward with and the part that they're not makes sense. We think it's defensible, and we think the cyber security thing, it seems like a week doesn't go by that you hear about Target being attacked or the government losing cyber information, and Iran and everybody else attacking. And we think that this is due to Paladin's special expertise at being kind of a bridge between the government, which is deeply involved, and corporations. We think it makes sense. We think it's kind of an exciting area. So we're supportive of putting a relatively modest $20 to $25 million in the product going forward. The other side of that is you've had some, you do have a general policy of trying to avoid specific narrow fund emphasis, and this is certainly one. We think it's an attractive one. So that's really what I have to say.
Bob, I sort of have a starting out a discomfort seeing a lot of sort of political high-level politicians, Wesley Clark and Willie and what have you, on various boards that increase cost structure dramatically. My guess is have very little knowledge about how to protect a cyber system. I'm being a little cynical here, but
appropriately so.
I think basically they're selling a public high-profile at one point name. Any reactions to that?
I certainly Wesley Clark wouldn't be the guy that was involved in figuring out the cyber defenses, but he might be able to open a door. So
and
within the government, or which is part of what these folks market to.
I think my concern is I actually attended the conference last year for this Paladin 2, and in looking at page 31, where I look at the names and what they're investing in, I think that it's a little misleading to say that this is a cybersecurity fund. These guys invest in a lot of other things, and not to say that they're bad things, but I just think that the name of the fund is a little... I mean, maybe it was put there to make us all go, oh, yeah, cybersecurity, yeah, that's important. But the reality is they're in biomed and other things that are really not cybersecurity.
Just to clarify, Deborah, on 31, this is past investments. And recall from Bob's comments that past funds have had a broader focus. Mm-hmm. So this is not representative of the investments that would be going into a cybersecurity fund.
Well, okay, and you duly noted, but then you go to, I mean, they do put it on page 26, biohealth technology as three main components of the fund.
We do go through each of the companies with them that they've invested in, and we're pretty careful about segregating them. So this is a cyber-related, this is not. And they actually have done quite well with the cyber-focused companies. If that was my investing track record, I'd be happy with it. Not perfect, but no one is.
Now, in their Homeland Security Fund, the first fund, they were looking at pre-IPO or pre-public fund or company investments. In this fund, is that still the focus, or are they focusing on publicly traded
funds? Private companies.
Yeah. And pretty early-stage private companies, too.
Secondly, and this doesn't have anything to do with the investment, but Peter Chung is a representative of this fund, and he's probably talked to everybody on this board many, many
times.
And do we know whether or not he's a third-party marketer, a placement agent? What is his status with this company? Because we don't have any documentation with regards to him and this company, as far as I know of.
I would ask the folks that are going to come in rather than us.
Okay.
We hope that we told Peter to, and we told
here.
Mike to have Peter to stay away from you. And so we hope nobody's been solicited by Peter recently. But Peter is a very persistent fellow, and we'll try to turn that off.
My conversation with Mike Steen earlier today, Peter's been more directed to the Asian marketplace than the U.S. marketplace. So we had the placement agent forms. I need to get those distributed to everybody here. But basically, just saying Peter's not involved in the solicitation of this business at this point.
Really? They signed something that said that?
Yes.
Really?
For this fund,
really?
Yes.
Okay. We have questions to ask then. All right. Tim, do you have a comments with regard
I'll
to this?
I'll offer my comments on a wrap-up basis.
If you haven't met Peter, you're the only one. I was going to say, four times already.
We have one woman
every meeting.
Just one.
You see one? Aaron, you see one?
Just one. Elizabeth Hackinson, page 8. This is their strategic advisory group.
Brian, you don't have to get him to waive this because the NSA is listening anyway.
How's everybody?
Morning.
A little morning.
Afternoon, I'm sorry.
Yes.
It would have been morning if we'd have been on schedule. Please make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
No. We'll go around and introduce ourselves because there are some new board members that haven't seen your faces and you haven't seen theirs yet. Jerry, you want to start?
Jerry, welcome, trustee.
Will Pigeon, trustee.
Karen Mitchoff.
John Phillips, trustee.
Marilyn Leadham, CEO.
Brian Haas, trustee.
Jerry Tellis, trustee.
Rusty Watts, trustee.
Deborah Allen, trustee.
And Gabe Rodriguez.
Thank you very much.
Quick question. There was a placement agent disclosure form that you filled out and signed with regards
That's
to
correct,
this
correct, this
product.
Morning, yes.
Probably every member on this board has been contacted by Peter Chung on
That's
behalf
correct.
Of your company with regards to this fund.
Yes.
This basically says that unless he's not paid by you, that he did not do that. We all know better than that. So could you explain to us what his relationship is with your company?
Yes, Peter Chung is the founder and managing director of Paladin Asia, and he is building our business. He works inside of Paladin. He works inside of Paladin on four or five different matters. The majority of the matters is with our portfolio companies in the asset management of the portfolio companies, helping them find markets in Asia, among other things, and to find markets here in the U.S. Like everybody at Paladin, he helps also raise money, but he is part of the Paladin team in doing that just like we are.
Okay. And he's been an employee of Paladin for how long?
We created Paladin Asia, I think I'm correct, about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Long before we launched Paladin Cyber.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, I mean, I just wanted to make sure that you were aware that he was talking to our group specifically with regards to the Cyber Fund and not the Asia, anything with regards to an Asia fund.
Right.
So, okay.
Right. I'm aware of that. He was also very helpful when we set up our first Paladin 3, when we brought Paladin 3 to this board as well.
Okay.
And he had a different status back then, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And we did declare him back then as a placement agent, but since then he's come on to Paladin.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I do want to thank everybody, and I'd just take a half a second to first of all thank you for your showing confidence in us and making the decision to come into Paladin 3, which is our second Homeland Security Fund with a $25 million investment. I think part of what you're going to hear today is that we've done well with that investment, that we've developed a very interesting and direct niche in the area of cyber and security in the cyber age. Before I start, Mr. Chairman, I would though like to ask my two colleagues here to introduce themselves again, because I think there's new members of the board here. We'll get some idea of what they do.
Okay, I'm Ken Minahan. I was tempted, Mr. Chairman, when you're going around to say I'm a Redskin fan born in Texas, but I don't think that would fit in the roll call you
okay,
were doing.
Okay, minus one.
I'm a United States Air Force retiree. Came on active duty in 1966 after graduating from Florida State University. Like all of my colleagues back then, we went to Vietnam after that, served in Vietnam, then came back. I enjoyed serving the country as a part of that experience, and so we stayed 33 years. My wife would say he couldn't hold a steady job. He moved 29 times in those 33 years.
most of my experience is in the intelligence committee and the technical side of the business, and so all of the technologies which we have today come from investments in the 80s and 90s, which I was able to help participate in, whether it's telecommunications, the computers, ARPANET to internet, all of those kind of things were of, and in this notion of serving, as the Cold War wound down, what I could see was these new technologies were coming out, but they didn't have the features of privacy and security and robustness that you'd like them to have. So after I retired, having moved those 29 times, my wife picked the next place we would live. We live in Annapolis, Maryland, and we don't move anymore, and we love that. But I was able to find Paladin Capital Group as an opportunity for me to continue that service and to focus on those needs for security and privacy and robustness in those new technologies that I had not been able to do as a part of the government drawdown after the Cold War. So I've been with Mike and Paladin for those 10 years since then, and in a very rewarding opportunity to serve.
My name is Neelu Howe. I've been with Paladin for about 10 years. I was a happy venture capitalist in California. The general and I had a common network within the intelligence community, and when I got the phone call and the opportunity to join Paladin, and the general recruited me, it was impossible to say no. It was the only opportunity for me to serve a mission, a greater mission, while doing something I loved, which was investing in the venture space. And it's been wonderful to have the general as a mentor teaching me the ropes within the homeland security space. I've been in the venture industry, as I said, for almost 20 years. Started my professional life as a lawyer and migrated very quickly to the business side within a year or so of that.
Chairman Neelu always understates that she's really a special sauce at Paladin, and I wasn't going to take no for an answer when we were recruiting. I like to tell people you can take the girl out of California, but you can't take California out of the girl, so I keep special watch on her when she's here.
One more issue. At the bottom of your document it says proprietary and confidential. This is a public meeting in California. Anything presented at a public meeting is a public document. So I'm assuming you're waiving confidentiality.
Yes, sir. We're happy to do that. Okay. Please. Thank you very much. What we're going to do is we're going to go through the presentations you have, but we promise we won't do every page. And
thank you. You have no idea. I'm a speeded up kind of person.
Believe me, we're gonna be as fast as we can. And the first part of the presentation at page 3, I think, states in the first 3 or 4 words exactly what we're doing here. We're getting superior risk-adjusted returns. First and foremost, we understand that our responsibility is to get great returns for you, and that's what we're all about here. Multi-stage, multi-sector, dual use. We're going to talk a little bit about why this isn't only cybersecurity, that this is really security in the cyber age, a broader, deeper focus of investing than you might suspect if you're just talking about the internet or if you're just talking about cybersecurity. It's a broader and deeper look at where critical infrastructure is. Page 4, we're an SEC-registered investment manager. The third bullet is probably the most important. Since we've started investing, we have invested in 31 cyber-related investments. It gives us a 10-year body of knowledge, 10 years of building networks inside of the cyber world that we think gives us a unique look and a unique ability to find transactions, to be able to add value to those transactions, and to be able to realize a great exit for the fund. On page 5, probably one of the more important things on page 5 is the second to the last bullet under firm milestones. We have 13 people that are associated with Paladin, either in strategic advisory group or on staff, in which they've got top security clearances. That gives us an interesting window into a marketplace of transactions and deals that can make a significant difference on the commercial side as well as on the government side. So dual use means our product, services, technologies must work in both places. We get our real profits out of the commercial side, but we get the verification, we get the confidence that what we're investing in comes out of the government side. I'll take you to page 7. Everybody on this page except for Richard Clark and Lee Buchanan are full-time at Paladin. Everybody on this page writes checks for every deal and participates in the carry in the fund. What are the things to take away from this page? First of all, this is a team that's been together since 2007, 2008. The team is going to stay together for this fund. They're going to be part of this cyber fund going forward. It's a stable team, has the requisite scientific background and experience that you need in order to be able to invest in this space. They have deep deal experience. Many of them are leaders in that they create networks of people, which you have to have in order to be successful in this areas. And then, as Nilu talked about earlier, you have to have operational experience. You've got to be able to understand what the companies are doing and how they're doing it. If you take a look at page 8, you see a partial listing of the networks that we build in order to be able to bring the best and the brightest at any time to the table on any one particular transaction and deal. Lots of interesting names. These names, some of them will change out. Some of them, most of them will stay on. About half of them are paid, and the other half write checks and participate in the carry on a going forward basis. We call on these people when there's an area of expertise that we need in order to be able to look at a particular a portfolio company, to conduct due diligence, sometimes sit on boards, help us understand how a particular technology will work inside of the critical infrastructure of society. Let me briefly take you to page 9. Page 9 essentially lays out for you in four quadrants the infrastructure that we have put together over 10, 11, 12 years. This infrastructure starts with strategic partnerships, and it starts with people like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Siemens, Sumitomo, Motorola, investing not out of their pension money, but out of the capital of their company to come in and really provide a background and experience, help us look at markets, provide some due diligence, sometimes provide transactions and deals, and then they become customers of our companies and sometimes acquirers. They get no special economic treatment, but they are very much a part of a system that allows us to see things that we wouldn't normally be able to see without these folks at the table. With that, I'll ask Ken to start with page 10 to talk a little bit about what the product looks like.
Okay, thanks, Mike. So remember I mentioned to you sort of had this sort of transition that was occurring in the late 90s and the transition into the 21st century, where we brought these new technologies along, but they really didn't have the security apparatus, the structure for privacy and robustness that the product services and technologies that were needed. So this first chart says when you say cyber age, you're talking about all of the technologies around you and I where we live, play, and work. This is not a narrow opportunity here. It's the age that we're in. It really certifies in our minds that we've transitioned from the industrial age and that that system that we're using right now doesn't have an immune system. And what we want to do is invest up into that immune system and make it more robust and survivable. If you go to the next chart, it's a kind of a fun chart to have when you're at the dinner table, but just for the right-hand side, the notion here of the cyber age is to kind of touch on this idea that what's really become our strategic coin is our intellectual property. And what's critical to us is our young people, one of whom is here. And I'm glad that she was able to join us this time and not, wasn't here last time because that's where all of the power and strength of the nation is going to lie in the 21st century. And this gives us an opportunity to focus on that. It also tells you why so many people are stealing our intellectual property, because no one else is producing it like we are with the quality and the robustness and the velocity that it's got. And the next chart says, well, if that's the case, then why don't we take just a minute and say, what are the characteristics of an investment, an opportunity that you'd like to look at? And I just wanted to list four here for you just to kind of get the notion here of simultaneity is that information now can be in several places at the same time. And so you have to be able to walk across a large big data problem in order for us to have successful products, services, and technologies. Secondly, convergence. If we'd been here in the industrial context, you would have said, are you an IT firm? Are you a health firm? Are you going to do DOD? What is it you're interested in? Convergence says the critical infrastructure that I mentioned to you that was built without the robustness and security and privacy that it needed is now converged and supports all of those different verticals. And so if you look, you now find opportunities to invest in big data, let's just say,
which have applications in health, have applications in IT, and so on. And so the platform from which you can invest in is critical to that. The velocity is my story. I know Bill Gates pretty well. We've had a lot of discussions. He uses the term web years, and what he's communicating on his side is that he has to keep up with the business that he's got every 3 months. And what that also tells us is that our adversaries are going that fast too. So this is not a point solution where you've done something and it's not and it takes care of whatever needs you've got. Both of them are moving in these web year contexts back and forth. And lastly, the big data part is to say, if that's the case, then what we're not looking at here is looking for a needle in a haystack. What we want to do is get all the needles out of the haystack and then search the needles for the kinds of information that we need to make the decisions in our products, services, and technologies. And so this notion here that Mike mentioned to you is you're really talking about security in the cyber age, not cybersecurity. And so if you go to the next chart, what you find is I've got a small military mind, so if you look at this chart from the bottom up, what you're sort of seeing here is what are those cyber age products, services, and technologies? Where do they fit in the critical sectors? Remember, this convergence notion gives us that investment opportunity. And then how do they come up to become the kinds of things that can be employed in this larger security in the cyber age context, because that's where the real business of the nation takes place. Now, Neil is going to take you next through the plot. I want to just enlarge a little bit on this. I'm glad you're here. NILU represents, in my view, what's good about our American youth. NILU works hard, has been well educated, knows the business. She can invest, she can raise, and she can work in the real companies. And then she always sends me emails at 11 o'clock at night because she knows I'm asleep. And those are always the ones that say, if I don't hear from you in 5 minutes, here's what I'm going to do. And so she's found out how to take care of the general without leaving them there. So having her here this time for Mike and I is really great because she wasn't able to attend the last presentation, and it gives the committee a chance. She represents the rest of Paladin Capital Group.
Thank you, sir. First of all, I like being called young, especially since you know I'm a Cowboys fan. And so what I'd love to do is I'll very quickly talk through our investment philosophy, how we go through the process. And I'm going to go through this really fast and hope that, as I tend to do, and hope that you can slow me down and ask any questions that you want. If you look at page 18, what differentiates Paladin and why I couldn't say no when the general called me and leave my wonderful life in California is Paladin's approach to venture capital investing is fundamentally different than other funds that I've been a part of, been in the venture industry for over 20 years at this point. Everyone talks about value add. We live and breathe the value add part of it. It's part of our work ethic. It's why I'm an operating partner and I'm working in one of our portfolio companies right now. We really work hard to build the networks and the context so that we can bring differentiated knowledge and expertise to our portfolio companies. We understand the commercial market. We understand the market drivers. We're in regular conversations, as is every venture fund. And we have a network within the federal government that lets us understand what, both from a threat, risk, vulnerability perspective, what the government is thinking about, but also the network to take our portfolio companies into the federal government, which tends to be an early adopter for a lot of technologies in the national security space. And with the relationships we have, and especially the relationships that the general has, we can turn those government customers, often in the intelligence community, into referenceable customers for our portfolio companies, so that when they go back to the commercial space and they say, I'm servicing the NSA and the CIA, so what needs do you have that they don't? It actually is a very compelling way to start the conversation in the commercial space. So the value add is really something we live and breathe every day at Paladin and take incredibly seriously. On the next page, quickly talk about the investment philosophy. Critical infrastructure is what we focus on. The vulnerabilities of critical infrastructure in the cyber age. So again, this isn't about cybersecurity. This is about security in the cyber age, where you have dynamic infrastructures that are continuously changing. You have lost control of the perimeter of your network. So right now, no one knows where their network begins and ends. And you have no ability to fully understand all of the threats. So you need to focus on the risks relative to your organization and address those risks so that you can have resilience. So no matter what the adversary wants to do, you have the ability to operate in that environment. And that's really the types of technologies and companies that we focus on. At the end of the day, it's mission-oriented, and we want to make money doing it. That's the premise of the fund. Going on to page 20, one of the key characteristics of our investments from day one has been this concept of dual use. It's been a cornerstone, and it's been true since the day I joined Paladin, which is we focus on companies and technology services products that service both the enterprise as well as the government space. And there's a convergence of needs in those markets. So we are not exclusively focusing on companies that look at the federal government. We leverage what the federal government can give us, both as a customer, but also in terms of the dollars, the non-dilutive financing that the government can provide in terms of research dollars as a customer that's willing to invest in product development. And that's really been a huge benefit for our portfolio. The last piece I'll touch on page 21 is, as we look at companies, what we try and look for isn't just trends in the market, but actual waves. A fundamental shift in how we think about a particular market. So if you take cybersecurity, for example, or network security, one of the big waves that's happened is the realization that it is actually a big data problem. As a general said, we're not looking for a needle in a haystack anymore. It's not about one needle. It's about a stack of needles and trying to go through it. And companies that focus on security, intelligence, and analytics are what's required in the market. It's been missing. It's a huge white space. And we believe there's billions of dollars of returns to be had in that market. So we really try and look for the tectonic shift in terms of the approach in the market. And the team, of course, matters just as much. A team that can execute is critical, and we have a good, a phenomenal network across the country in looking at that. The engine of innovation is particularly critical, the ability to bring new products to market effectively and keep the company competitive. The internet speed that the general was talking about, that's the speed at which companies need to be able to adapt. So in terms of our philosophy, those are the criteria that we focus on.
26.
Jumping quickly to page 26, both Mike and Ken have talked about the scope of investment. When we talk about a cyber fund, we want to make sure that the context is apparent. It's an incredibly broad space that we're looking at. There's tens of thousands of companies that exist in this space. We have, in Paladin 3, I think, looked at close to 4,000 companies. We look at somewhere between 400 to 700 companies a year. So the aperture is incredibly broad. We hunt for deals. We look for the waves. We look for the team. So if you look at our portfolio, about two-thirds of the investments we've made are companies that we've gone and found. Often they weren't raising money. That's when we like to find them. We don't take part in auctions. We don't like to compete with other firms. And we've been able to win deals at better valuations by talking about our value add. Every single one of our CEOs is a reference for us. And we encourage any company that we're talking to go and speak with our portfolios. So as you can see, cybersecurity is just one small piece. It's the first bullet under enterprise IT cyber. It's really much broader as you look at the shifting landscape in the cyber age.
Terrific. Where I'm going to go now is we're going to go to page 32 to talk about numbers. When we created the Homeland Security Funds, we as Nilu and Ken have said, we focus on critical infrastructure of society. We realize that there are vulnerabilities inside that critical infrastructure, and we want to find products, services, and technologies which are going to make that critical infrastructure resilient at the time of an attack or a natural disaster or other kind of inappropriate or criminal activity. That was the basis of what we put together back in 2002. That is the basis for this fund. When we put this together for our Homeland Security Funds, we created two wings. We created an alternative energy wing, and we created a small slice of wanting to clean the water, air, food supply, and surfaces at times of attack in clean tech, very small slice of that. As we go forward with the Paladin Cyber Fund, our goal is to achieve 3 times your money. Our goal is to achieve 25% internal rate of return or higher. And as we look at the marketplace for alternative energy and other non-cyber technologies, we cannot find models that will get us that return. So we are leaving behind alternative energy, and we're leaving behind non-cyber technologies, and we're going forward with cyber bio and those in that context. That's why you see our numbers broken down, Mr. Chairman, the way they are here on this page, so that you can understand. Now, we're going to do fine in the alternative energy portfolio. It takes longer and is more capital intensive. We are looking to get, as I say, three times your money, and we can't see a model where alternative energy is going to deliver that in the period of time that we'll be investing here. So we're going forward with cyber and cyber bio. In the Paladin 3 portfolio in which you're invested, we have, for purposes of these numbers, in other words, through the end of the year, we have completed 27 transactions. 19 of them are in cyber bio. So the numbers that you see under gross IRR and net IRR are reflected of those 19 transactions. Since the end of the year, in January and February, we've invested in three additional deals, but that's not reflected here in these numbers. I want to make sure that we've got the numbers correct. These are numbers as of the end of the year. And this reflects 19 transactions, we think that as the markets now, the exit markets are expanding. So when we first came and talked with you back in 07 and 08, there was really one exit market that made sense. That was the 50 to 100 defense companies and integrators that had huge amounts of cash that would be the logical buyers of the technologies that we have. Well, what's happened now is that we have those companies. As a matter of fact, they have hordes of cash. They have huge amounts of cash. But now the financial players have come to the table. It's like music to my ears to hear the financial players come to the table. As a matter of fact, the last two exits that we had of our cyber companies, October, November of last year, we were able to exit at 4 times cash on cash and 3.8 times cash on cash for those investments. And those investments were sold to financial players. That tells you some very interesting things for us. One, we can get auctions going between the financial players and the strategic players. Secondly, it means that these financial players are coming to the table, and what they're saying is there's going to be an extraordinary level of growth in these. So they can afford to buy them from us at 3 to 4 times our money and still see great return for them. So the two players that came in, Insight Ventures and TA Associates, bought these companies. They're financial players. They're looking to make 2, 3, 4 times their money, and that tells us that they're seeing that these markets are going to be greatly expanding and that there's great opportunity for us. The third area that's come to the table is the large private equity funds, the buyout funds. What they're now looking, we see about three of these funds that are now doing this to buy these companies. They're looking to create cyber platforms, buy these companies, and then take those platforms public. So we see the exit universe to have gotten much bigger. There's always the fourth alternative, which is for us to take the companies public. People at this table have done that in the past, but that is something that we're not relying on. We're relying on the other three, and certainly in the long term, we see the growth in this market to be substantial, and hence the returns to get better, Mr. Chairman, we believe. I'll anchor out by saying again, thank you for having us in. We are good investors. We're good stewards of your money. We will continue to be good stewards of your money on a going forward basis. We would ask for a substantial commitment to the fund. I think you're going to be very well served by our focus in moving forward to make sure that the pensioners that you represent have another nickel in their paycheck, because that's what we think about at Paladin. We do this about once every 2 months. We talk about the people that we really represent, and that's the pensioners. You know, and that's where I've come from in my life is working with people that work with the tools or are out there day in and day out, and that's what we represent. And that's how we see it when we do our investing. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate, we're willing to answer questions.
Okay. When do you expect to close, or what stage are you in at this point?
Yes, we would look, hopefully with your commitment, to be able to close in April or May, sir.
Okay. Dollar value of what signed commitments do you have to this point?
So the commitments that we have roughly are 35 to 40 million. I want to make sure that you understand, Mr. Chairman, what I'm saying to you. They're not signed. They're saying to us, we're coming in. Let's just see who the list of the people are that are there.
Okay.
And they've gone through all the transaction documents, but they wait to make sure they know what the syndicate looks like.
Okay. To this point, do you have any signed commitments?
Yes.
Okay. And dollar value of that?
Actual signed commitments would be high net worth families out of Europe, $2
million. $2 million,
okay. And I'm sorry if I missed it. How much are you looking to raise for this particular fund?
Up to $300 million. Our last fund was $340 million. We feel very comfortable at that level. I mean, you don't want to be too big, because then you end up doing investments that are for reasons unrelated to whether they're good investments. So that we feel very comfortable with that.
Well, and I'm sorry, Jerry, I interrupted on you. You say you have commitments for $35 million, so you're right under or right over 10. You're looking for the rest of that in the next month or two?
Well, no, that's for the first close.
So
typically we go to an initial close.
I see.
And then there's a period of time in which other investors come in over time.
Thank
Very
you.
Hard to herd everybody together at the same time. That's an art, not a science.
Mike, after the first close, do you have any scheduled dates for future closings or approximations?
We do rolling closings. So as we get investors committed, then we close them.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, we very seldom go out more than a year beyond the initial close.
Okay.
That's what we've done in the past times, but that's pretty much a frame of reference or a way to look at it.
Okay. Is there a, maybe I missed it, is there like an org chart in this package that shows us the management structure of the firm?
So
I've got a list on page 7.
Right, you have a list on page 7. So we're relatively flat in many respects. We have an executive committee. Three members of the executive committee are sitting here now. There's several other members of the executive committee. They're managing directors. That we then have principals, and we have, as we sit today, two principals. We then have vice presidents. We've got one vice president, two vice presidents. We have two vice presidents, and then we have associates and analysts. Since we saw you last, we have opened an office here in Silicon Valley, and it has three people in that office, and that's become a good way in which to find not only excellent deals but to find other firms that syndicate with us. So we have Kleiner Perkins, we have Bessemer. We all syndicate together.
And who has final say? What group in your org chart has final say over an investment, either a purchase or an exit?
Right. We have an investment committee. Mm-hmm. The investment committee meets every Monday. We actually have a deal flow committee that meets every Monday, and then we have an investment committee that meets right after the deal flow. And it's the investment committee that makes the decisions not only to invest, but to also do follow-on investing and then exiting.
From a process perspective, it's very much of a consensus-driven process, so we really try and make sure that all the investment professionals are on board with a given deal we do. We spend a lot of time talking the deals through. We can move very fast, but because of our value add, we also like to get to know management teams really well to make sure when we open doors, they can walk through them. By definition, that means we're spending more time with those companies, so internally we have more time to build that consensus. So, and it does work out that way. at our firm.
On page 7, who of these people, who sits on the investment committee?
General Minahan, Alf Andreasen, myself, Mark Maloney, Nilu. That would be the investment committee.
Okay, so the five of you are,
yes,
have final say.
Yes, and you know, as we build the team, and here's your core team. As we build the team, we may put others on the investment committee going forward as well. Okay. But that's the core.
And does anyone have veto power, or is it simple majority, or do you generally come to a consensus?
It's if you ever have to go to investment committee and vote in the context of it's going to be a 4-3 vote, then you really don't want to do that deal.
Okay.
You know, because you want to make sure the entire team is behind it. Now, there are robust discussions that take place on a day-in and day-out basis, and that's what you want here. You want that kind of creative juices. You want a little bit of tension, sometimes a lot of tension, to really pull out what is good or bad about a deal. So I always say if we have to go and take a vote in that sense, then we failed.
And just to add to that, Mike, again, this comes back to we really do operate very differently than most funds I know. We all roll up our sleeves with all our portfolio companies, so we don't have this approach of, okay, it's your deal. If you want to do it, go do it, and I'm going to be hands off. Because of that, it's actually really important to have consensus when you go into the deal, because you want the firm behind you, because you're going to pull on the entire firm's resources to add the value that you need to add. And again, I realize that a lot of people talk about the consensus aspect of it, but because of our ethic around value add, it's critical that everyone's bought into a deal and that we have enough discussions to get to answer all the questions. And there are great questions that are asked.
Yeah. Okay.
Jerry? I have a couple of questions, if I might. Yesterday, there was the announcement of what some might characterize as a draconian future cuts in the Pentagon. Will you be forced or to factor that in, or likely to have to factor that into your discussions with regard to opportunities?
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to give a short answer and then a longer answer. If you read that
whole
thing,
no,
it's pretty good. Okay, the two places where there won't be reductions is special operations and cyber. Mm-hmm. So the two growth curves within that decline have always been those two. So we have surfed those two lines for several years to this point.
Yep.
That's how Mike describes the deals to you. That's not going to change as we go forward. That actually is going to get better.
Can I add to your response and just make it a second longer? So one of the great things about the cuts is it's being used as a good reason for a lot of organizations and agencies to rip out their existing technology infrastructure and put in new technologies that can scale, that are less expensive, less cumbersome, get rid of the consultants. That actually creates tremendous opportunities for our companies. So I actually believe not only does it not really impact us because the cyber budgets are staying in place, but it is being used as a way to upgrade the technology infrastructure, especially within the intelligence community. And that's going to create even more opportunities for our portfolio companies.
Perfect segue to my second question. If you have the opportunity, are there companies, don't need to name them, but are there companies that you look at that are examining human factors or specializing in human factors? Because I will tell you that as a cynic, we're going to be investing millions of dollars. The country will be investing hundreds of millions of dollars in new cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And there's another Ed Snowden out there that's going to walk out with a flash drive. Mm-hmm. And there's another guy in a basement in Sochi right now that is accessing the system.
Yes.
They're going to stay ahead of all this kind of stuff. Is there a way we could? Are there human factor that we can
invest with.
And yes, with all due respect, General, there are some officers.
I'm not going to like the rest of what he said.
there are a lot of officers up in North Dakota that are going to lose their jobs because they've been, passing around answers to one another and basically working around whatever security was there. So how do you deal with the human factor?
As they should.
Lose their jobs, I suspect. Right. You're saying. Yeah.
So the answer is yes, and there's two places where it fits, and we actually have some examples, but I won't go through them this morning. One set of human factors is the best thing you can do in a cyber age, when you say security in cyber age, is have well-trained, certified people who understand what they're doing. You're starting to see product, service, and technology offerings that provide that framework, and then a certification process that you go through in order to perform. So there's what I'll describe as the good person side of all that. The bad person side of all that we're starting to see in these big data problems, we start to talk about finding needles in a stack of needles. If you can take the haystack away and see all the needles, there's probably only one bad actor, and there's probably one Snowden in those five needles I found. And the question is, can I get those needles out and react to those in what I'll describe as a real near real-time perspective? Because you can detect those activities that are occurring, and we're starting to see some of those opportunities too, one of which we put NILU in to make sure it's hugely successful.
There are some investment opportunities that could, in fact,
they already help. Exist today.
We'll never plug today. All the holes, but to help.
No, they are, you're exactly right. Let's make it a fair fight.
Let me give you a deal we have in our portfolio right now, because you're right on one of the major issues. One of the major issues is the internal threat, people inside of the company or inside of the organizations. But we've invested in a company called FishMe. So one of the way we look at it, the way there are 6 billion attack surfaces that the bad guys can get into your systems through. Every single system you see, computer you have, the phone you have, anything that's connected, and I can tell you some stories about other ways that everything that's connected becomes an attack surface. The biggest cyber warriors that we can create are the people that work on computers, which is everybody in this room. And so what happens is the bad guys attack you. The guy sitting in Russia who's trying to attack, he's attacking usually by coming in with a phishing message. And then when you get that, it says, oh gee, Marilyn Leadon sent me a message that says click on this, and because you know Marilyn, she's a trusted person, you go ahead and you click on it, and in comes all the malware. Okay, that's phishing. FishMe does the following: it gives your organization, your enterprise, the ability to be able to send out false phishing emails to everybody in the enterprise. Those false phishing emails, once opened, then does a 2-minute tutorial to the person that has hit that. Very nice, not punitive, not anything else, but a 2-minute tutorial to say what you should have been thinking about when you looked at it. Okay? And this company is scaling beyond all ability. It's really going great. We're going to do very well with this company, but to your point, it's the human factor. We're looking for more of those kinds of transactions, because the human factor can be both an offensive or a defensive player here. It's not like football, it's like soccer. In soccer, everybody's an offensive or defensive player. In football, you're one or the other. Here, we want you to become a cyber warrior to be able to stop that bad stuff from getting in, and that's one way we do it. So you're really on it. This is going to be a big area to invest in. We've already started to do it.
The holy grail of security is that you would use machine learning to stop every threat coming into your system.
Could you repeat that, please?
Sure. The holy grail of security is that you could use machine learning and take the human out of it. That's probably 10, 15 years away, is my guess, if we ever get there. And there's also 0% unemployment for security operators right now. So it's an industry where if you're mediocre at what you do, you will have gainful employment. There aren't enough people. So right now, the problem we're trying to solve is making their lives easier, making them more efficient by taking the noise away and solving as much problems as we can through analytics and intelligence and machine learning. But we're not there yet in terms of taking the human. The human still has to look at all those signals and have the context to figure out what they need to do.
And share their password with the person next to them.
or just use the password once.
That's simple. Quit.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming out. And
thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Enduring
thank
our weather. Our liquid
we're
sunshine.
We're thrilled with this weather.
So. Good job. Thank you, sir.
So I was asked, I spoke at RSA yesterday, and again, kind of similar question. I said, General, what would you, if you could wish for anything, what would you wish for the Baker Ness investment. I said, well,
bigger retirement?
No, I said, can you find somebody to buy the Washington Redskins? So we can do it.
I thought you just wanted to change their name.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rusty, let's deal with this issue and then we'll take a break.